the Soil, where we talk about current controversial topics in agriculture. Throughout this podcast, we will welcome many special guests who give us insight into these controversies. Follow along as we navigate these topics. Let's get digging.
At what cost? My guests here with me today are Mr. Carter Woodruff and Mr. Colin Miller. They both have a pretty large background in agriculture. And my first question is, I'll go to Mr. Woodruff first. Can you give us a general sense of what your stance on this issue is?
Well, as you stated before, Lena, it's adapting and changing pretty much every month. We thought it was the biggest thing, and Colin alluded to that too. We've got quite a number of farmers that when they initially started with tractors that would drive themselves is the kind of term I like to use for it. That was an amazing end. That was some of the beginning part of the people. I work for Farm Credit, so I deal with a large, expansive group of farmers over about 10 or 12 counties in southern Middle Tennessee. And initially, we only started out with, probably two or three producers that did that, had that kind of technology. But now we've probably got, 25, 30, maybe 50 to some degree. And whether they're utilizing it in planting or spraying or whatever they're doing, they're using GPS and all that. That's becoming more of a standard in tractors and combines. But the drone deal, now that's a different deal, and Colin may be able to address that as well. But that's really starting to become a new facet of agriculture. And, my deal has always been with all these things, as long as they can enhance profitability, as long as they can, and generally by increasing production or enhancing it at a reasonable cost but per unit, then you're going to get a deal where it's going to be worthwhile to you to do it. Otherwise, it's not worthwhile. But for most of the farmers I got dealing with it, it's been worthwhile to this point.
All righty. How about you, Mr. Miller?
Well, as Carter said, I work for the retail side of the ag business. I work for the co-op, and so I see it from a retail side of this. And yes, the now that the precision agriculture is becoming, what am I trying to say? It's becoming a little bit older now, so it's becoming a little bit more affordable for the average farmer. This year I've sold several of GPSs for guys to set up in their cab tractors to become more efficient on spraying just their pastures. Guys that's got, 30, 40 head of cattle, they can be more efficient by using, this new technology. It's become more affordable now. When it first came out, it was not affordable, not for just an average farmer. And as far as when we go out and we can spread fertilizer on Carter and my hay fields or pasture fields, we can, if this field over here calls for, the same type of fertilizer, but it calls for a heavier rate, well, we can put a heavier rate over here and then we can cut it down. Or if this side of the field calls for this set of rate and this other side calls for a lower rate, we can change it, just to within a turn of a dial. But yes, I think as far as, it helped, it's always helped the bigger farmers, but now it's coming down to the smaller farmer. And we're able to, as me and Carter being down here in the small end, we can, now start to afford some of these luxuries that the larger farmers years ago were able to afford on the front end. And if me and Carter can be profitable and make money and stay in it, then that's the name of the game.
Alrighty. So as you said, you're starting to be able to use some of these innovations that precision agriculture has brought to us. Can you go into a little bit of depth about anything that you have started to use?
Go ahead, Colin.
Well, as far as what I've personally used, I've used the GPSs in helping in spring and becoming, because I'm, you know, the old way you had to sort of guess your if your sprayer sprayed 30-foot swat, you know, you had to sort of guess where you had been, and at times you wasted chemicals by overspraying, you know, overspraying where you've sprayed before, or leaving gaps. And if you don't kill those, you know, if you leave a 10-foot, 20-foot gap and you've got weeds in that 20-foot gap, well, you know, all the spraying you've done is almost going to be, you know, for nothing, because that's going, you know, when those get matured and those go to seed, you know, and you bush hog it or cows knock it down, well, then you've sprayed it all over your field again. So, you know, me personally, I've used that in a spray, in a tractor, and been able to be more efficient in spraying, because chemicals are not getting any cheaper. You know, chemicals every year, I've been at the co-op 9 years and they've just continued going up. So any way that we can cut down on waste and be more efficient, you know, the whole thing for farmers have been for the last 10 years is, you know, activists have attacked us for, you use too much chemicals, you use too much fertilizer, you use too much this. Well, now we can say, no, we're using the right amount and we're being more efficient about using it, saving us money and using less chemicals in the long run. So that's how I've used it personally.
Alrighty, thank you. And Mr. Carter, this question is more directed towards you a little bit. What advances can you say that you personally used since where you started or where your family started that you can remember?
In anything, Elena?
That, yes.
Oh, Lord. Primarily, I grew up on a dairy, Elena, and we milked cows by hand. We thought it was a fantastic thing when they came out with a machine with a claw on it that you could milk into a bucket. And then we later on attached it to a milk can, which we put over in a cooler, and we sold our milk to the old creamery and Carnation. We did both those. That was my first taste of technology, you know, versus milking by hand, pouring it in by hand, all that kind of stuff. You know, I guess in the beef cattle thing, it's happened that way as much or even more. You know, the dynamics of how we handle our livestock, the manner and the tools that we have. You know, I lean on Colin Heavy. He's my expert for equipment and things that I need to do. And I've bought several things, continued buying things that make it easier for me to handle cattle. I work all my cattle myself. I don't have any help. And it's a very difficult thing to do that. It's Colin alluded to.
And yes, sir.
So you gotta have all the help you can get. And, you know, we've got the corral systems and the squeeze chutes and all, you know, all kinds of things along that line that are really aided. Now, you know, far as in feeding and things of that nature, you know, I started out with low tricycle tractors, Elena, and feeding with John Deere's and Parmalee's, and I finally, in my old life, finally bought a tractor, had a cab on it, and it's been the most wonderful thing in the world. But it's allowed me to stay healthier and be able to do more than what I was doing in previous times. So technology's been a friend. I won't say that I've been the most ardent advocate at times of it, and I've kind of waited to see where people and experiences have led me to decide what to do. But you know, it's a huge thing. You can't stay in the same way all the time. Things change, and so that's what we have to understand about whether it's working cattle or whether, like Colin said, spraying pastures or doing row crops or whatever. So it's most of the farmers you'll find, even the old ones like myself, are very keen to listen and look at things. You know, I'm excited about this drone thing. I was very much against it in the first, but I see applications for it to be very important for farmers and helping us handle our livestock and our crops and that sort of thing. So
exactly,
keep my eyes open. Yeah.
All righty, a bit of a follow-up for you there, since you did mention that you started out as a dairy farmer, or your family yes. did. So did mine, Mr. Winston's did. Most people that we know in our area started out as dairy farmers.
Right.
And they stopped because there wasn't money in it anymore. Do you believe that precision agriculture or the innovations that we have made have kind of excluded small town farmers from the dairy production?
That's an interesting question. In the dairy industry, probably so. Everything, there aren't very few, unless they're organic type dairies or whatever, very few small dairies anymore. Rutherford County was the second largest dairy county in Tennessee when I was a little boy. Greene County was first, and we had 230 something dairies at one time in Rutherford County, and they were mostly small operations, anywhere from 7-8 cows up to 60, 80, maybe even we used to consider 100, over 100 being a big herd. Now 100 cows, Colin, won't even begin. You can't even begin to make things work hardly with that. So the technology is driven. A small farmer can't pay for robotics and things of that nature as far as milking and stuff is concerned. So, you know, and all the automatic systems that Darien has access to. So, I would say yes, Elena, to a degree it's pushed some of the smaller farmers out of business. It's gone big. Dairy has really gone big in the last 15, 20 years. And when I say big, I mean a lot more cows milking in the herds.
Okay, and another question for you, Mr. Miller. What changes have you seen within your customers being in the retail side? After all these innovations have changed, have you seen a different in a pattern in customers or a different socioeconomic stability in your customers?
Well, I'm gonna make one comment to Carter talking about the dairy. We now have only one family dairy left in Rutherford County.
Yes.
Then we've got the college dairy, but as far as a family ran dairy, we only have one left. The second to last one is just fixing to phase out of business. But going to what Elena just asked, yes, I've seen some older farmers just call it quits because they don't feel like they can change or maybe even I have one or two that I can think of that just refuse to change. And so they just decided to call it quits. But most, I would say 90%, maybe even 95% of my customers are very well receptive, to the new ways. And the vast majority, it has paid well off for them. Their investments have, saved them money, and have, helped them grow their operation. You know, Carter talking about ways of working cattle more efficiently. I've talked about spraying and fertilizing more efficiently. Carter touched on the drones. I was like him. I was very apprehensive of the drones because the media loves to stir that the whole drone topic with a stick. After I have seen it work in our agronomy department at the co-op, you know, being able to go in places where, you know, especially after the crops have come up, you know, where we as humans can't really go and see very well, you know, they can take those drones up and really get down low and really have a good clear picture right in the middle of a field what something may be going on that we can't see, you know, on foot. And then as far as, you know, the drones and satellite being able to map fields and look at different terrain and then also, you know, like I said, you've got big, large fields, you know. Now, we don't have that many around here that are 50, 60 acres in one big section like they do in West Tennessee and other parts of the country. But we do have some farms that've got those bigger fields. And just to be able to see from a bird's eye view and be able to map those out on a computer and be more efficient as far as what products we put on there as a co-op or as the producer himself or herself. But yes, I have seen I think the new technology coming down as it gets more affordable, I think it will help the small farmer, the family farmer, The dairy industry, yes, that's a totally different. Unfortunately, that's a hard industry right now, and they're really getting hurt as far as being a family farmer in the dairy industry. The beef cow industry, and the row crop industry is not as targeted when it comes to precision agriculture. But when it comes to precision agriculture in the dairy field, I agree with Carter. It's hard for these family farms that are milking, especially less than 100. You know, it's just almost impossible for them to stay in it. But as a beef cow operator myself and Carter, I think as things become even more affordable and more education is done, the co-op really tries to do a good job at educating our clients and our customers on these new instruments and this new technology that's coming out. And, you know, I'll make a mention of this real quick. You know, we've got cattle scales that I sell that are on the TAEP program. And now we've got a scale indicator that you can Bluetooth to your cell phone, to your iPad, and you can lock in the weights remotely instead of having to have that big monitor hanging on the side of your alleyway. You can remotely do it from your phone or your iPad and record the weights, put information in there on that calf or that cow, you know, whether it be vaccinations or whether you've given that animal antibiotics or anything like that, you know, any kind of vet treatments or even breeding purposes. You know, that right there in itself I've sold a couple of those already, and the customers have loved them. And it's become, it's fairly reasonable. So I think as time goes on and it becomes, you know, new technology comes out and it becomes affordable, I think as long as the family farmer, just say here around Middle Tennessee, is willing to try it and accept some change, I think it'll be fine. But yes, you know, my biggest, you know, I'm a big proponent of let's keep the family farms around, and I'm there at the co-op to help educate people and keep them up to date on what's going on, because if you don't keep up to date and sort of help make these gradual changes, I mean, you will be forced out. I mean, it's the economy and the world we live in now. I mean, it's getting a high tech. You know, I can remember as a kid riding on my granddaddy's tricycle tractor and the small tractors. Now we're dealing with 100 plus horsepower tractors. So it is an ever changing world.
Alrighty. So I have just a question that I didn't have written down, but it's just a question I have. Mr. Carter, as he said that some of these innovations are happening, are requiring the use of cell phones and iPads and things like that, and we all encounter problems getting onto the Zoom call right here. How do you believe that you and your generation are adapting to being able to use these mobile devices?
Been a challenge, Elena. That's a nice way of saying it. you're dealing, I've spent my whole life dealing with people. And when you deal with people, there's different ways of doing it, but I found out I've built most of the relationships I have one-on-one, interpersonal, sitting down talking with people, being able to see and feel over the course of a lifetime. You will adapt the ability to read people just like you can a lot of other things. And so I think as we, you know, we've got a certain aspect with the technology like we're using tonight here that allows us to interact. But I still think one of the failures of all this is going to be people getting away from people. And that's my concern as an older person. I see the purpose of this. I see the drive with it. There's times that I want to take this and I want to heave it to the sun, you know, but give you a little instance for today, Elena, very quickly, you and Colin. This is a six. Y'all know what a six is, iPhone 6. That's like an ancient thing, you know. And so I couldn't get my updates to upgrade. Well, I deleted videos and pictures and apps and all that kind of stuff. Couldn't get enough memory cleared, but I kept thinking, what is happening? I only have like 16 gigs, and 16 gigs is like way back, you know. If you ain't got any more storage than that, you ain't got nothing, you know. And so everything now is 64, and my daughter Mariana and Elizabeth, they got 140 something, you know. So I couldn't even do the updates on it because I still had the older phone, and it's because I was apprehensive to get one of the newer models because it's harder to learn some of the things with it. But you know, I'm lucky to have young friends like you and Colin and some of the people at work that.
Oh, be careful, Carter. I'll be there right with you.
But got to have that people thing. You lose the people thing, we're going to be a sad situation in this society we live in. So interact with people personally when you can and are allowed.
Exactly. So, yeah.
And another little question for you, since you're being more. With you being more on the financial side of agriculture, have you seen any, I'm not going to say failures, but any not smart financial choices pertaining to these innovations and the investments that they've made in them?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, when you're in a business like I'm in, you're going to see people take, do things, and they're, so many times Colin deals with the repercussions of that in his retail business as well. People come and they make decisions without having any knowledge, and they'll buy things that they don't know how to operate. They'll spend too much. You know, I look at a lot of balance sheets, and there's one of the interesting things in the beef cattle business is that you will look at people externally at their farms and what they do, and you'll think, boy, they are very successful farmers. They are really doing well. But you look at their tax returns, and you'll see they're not making a lick of money. They're losing money. But they got money from business income and other things, and they're willing to do that. But the appearances can be deceiving sometimes. So you got to be careful. As long as you can make this technology work where it enhances your bottom line, your profitability, then it's a wise use. If you can't do that, you better stay away from it and wait till you can do that. But, you know, that's not saying to be against it. I'm just saying that's what you have to do. So.
And one final question for y'all here today. Being members of the Farm Bureau, having relations with the young farmers and ranchers, Do they offer any type of courses, seminars, anything to try to train or just give information out to up-and-coming farmers, older farmers, of how to use these innovations efficiently for their operations?
Go ahead, Colin.
Well, yes, they have some, they've got plenty of resources, and yes, they offer some training sessions and ones like that. But, you know, Carter and myself both being on the Farm Bureau board, you know, on the local level, we give all kinds of money at times, different times of the year to the local UT Extension office. The local UT Extension office is a great asset to farmers. We're lucky to live in Tennessee where we have a strong extension office that offers a variety of resources and training opportunities that's up to date. I mean, you know, me and Carter both have been through the Master Beef programs, and, you know, it changes year to year, new information. You know, I wished I had the time to take them every year because things change every year. But yes, the Farm Bureau offers a good, a good vast array of different options for new farmers and for, you know, farmers that's been in the business their entire life. And they're a good asset for farmers in Tennessee to have. Tennessee Farm Bureau does an excellent job supporting the family farm. And I'm proud to be a member of the Farm Bureau, and, But I would also tell people to really reach out to their local extension offices or the nearest one to them that is very active, because they are a great asset to utilize.
All righty. Well, thank you all for joining me today for this. And thank you for all your insights